Welcome, dear listeners, to another fascinating episode of the London History Podcast, where we delve into the vibrant and diverse past of this great city. I am your host, Hazel Baker, a qualified London tour guide and founder of londonguidedwalks.co.uk. Whether you're a born and bred Londoner or a curious listener, join us on a journey through time as we explore the city together. Each episode is supported by show notes, transcripts, photos, and further reading, all to be found on our website. If you enjoy what we do, then you'll love our guided walks and private tours that we offer throughout the year, all bookable online at londonguidedwalks.co.uk. Subscribe now to never miss an episode. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review and rating to help spread the word to other history lovers. Today's episode is about celebrating the 70th anniversary of the Royal Festival Hall's pipe organ. Joining me today is James McVinney, who begins his South Bank Centre residency with not one, but two concerts, and one includes music by J.S. Bach. He will shed light on the instrument's profound historical significance and its pivotal role in shaping the organ music scene in London and beyond. As we explore the organ's origins in the post-Second World War era, we'll uncover how its design and Ralph Downes's vision mirrored the cultural and musical transformations of the time. James, very warm welcome to you.
Hi, thank you very much.
Now, you're starting a residency at the South Bank Centre, celebrating the 70th anniversary of the Royal Festival Hall organ. So could you possibly share with us the historical significance of this organ and also how it's maybe influenced the landscape of organ music in London and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question and a complicated one to answer, really. But I got two concerts coming up in March. When I was putting together the programmes for both of them, I was kind of just trying to think back to what the designer of this instrument would have been trying to do in 1951, which is when the hall opened. And in fact, the organ was built in the intervening years and finally came into being in 1954. The organ was built by and designed by a man called Ralph Downes, who was kind of a bit of an outsider to the musical establishment. He was an organist himself, but wasn't from the cathedral tradition. He was the organist of Brompton Oratory, which is a Catholic church, and had spent some time in America. So was very much interested in the music from the golden era of composition for the organ. So that's for the 17th and 18th centuries in Central Europe, really the organ tradition that kind of culminated in the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. So, and the organ at this point in the 20th century, in the 50s, you know, post-war, was a completely different kind of beast. So the organ in the Albert Hall, kind of a very good example of how organ building was at that time. And they had been developed in this country in the 19th century to be kind of vehicles for the Industrial Revolution, in a way. They were technologically more advanced than the instruments that Bach would have known, and certainly quite a lot louder, and were designed really to explore the kind of orchestrally conceived music that was being written in the 19th and 20th centuries. So they wanted to build an organ in the new South Bank Centre that would be forward-looking to the future. However, Ralph Downes, his approach was to actually... Ralph Downes' vision for this organ was that it should look back, in fact, 200 years, and be a kind of snapshot of organs that would have been known to Bach and his contemporaries. The implication was that organ building had taken a bit of a wrong turn in the 19th and 20th centuries. And indeed, I mean, if you try to play Bach's music on a big romantic 19th century organ, it's a wonderful experience in some respects, but it's not the ideal kind of treatment that brings the music alive. So this organ really kind of was a very unusual addition to the musical landscape of London. And yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful instrument as well. And it's a great instrument for contemporary music as well. So the first concert I'm playing in March is a concert of the kind of Bach and North German contemporaries and the kind of period that leads up to Bach. And then the second concert I'm playing is kind of looking ahead to the future and this piece by Tristan Perich, which we'll come on to, I'm sure, in a minute.
So you mentioned about, well, really the aftermath of the Second World War and the organ being designed then. Now, how did that design and also the vision of Ralph Downes, how did that reflect the immediate culture and also the music shifts at that time?
The organ music at that point was slightly set apart from the early music revival that had been happening in America and in Europe. So right from the 1920s in Germany and France to a certain extent, and also in America, people were beginning to be aware of a kind of historically informed way of going about performing this music. So, and this, of course, happened a little bit later in England, but, you know, by the 60s and the 70s, we were performing Bach on period instruments. So that hadn't really happened by 1950. I mean, you just have to remember that, you know, London would have been completely destroyed by the Blitz, and the memories of the Blitz would have been really still very prescient. Rationing was still very much a thing, maybe not by 1954, but there was a great sort of political statement made by the government at the time, which was saying that there should be a new concert hall for 3,000 people that would have been a kind of way of uplifting people and to replace the Queen's Hall that had been destroyed in 1941. The music establishment, I think, probably wanted an organ that would do what it had done in the first part of the 20th century. That's to say, support massed singing of Handel's Messiah, like the town hall tradition, and an organ on which you could perform orchestral music. And indeed, it's interesting to think back to the 19th century, where certainly the town hall tradition with organists playing music by Wagner, etc., etc., those great big Germanic romantic orchestral pieces, they would have come to an English pair of ears through organ transcriptions. So Ralph Downes was trying to do something completely different. He had a kind of foresight that said that the organs that he wanted to design and build would go back to this golden era of organ composition. And that sort of making a kind of philosophical statement about what the organ should be and the kind of idealized music. And I mean, I'm of the opinion that it doesn't really get very much better than music by Bach in general, but certainly for the organ. So it's wonderful to have an instrument in London still today in 2024 where you can perform this music and contrapuntal music to a kind of idealised standard.
Mm. I think it's also worth considering really the space in which it's in as well. So space at the Royal Albert Hall, for example, I mean that's vast, isn't it? Absolutely huge. So it's going to have a different sound.
Yeah, it's the Albert Hall. And of course, organs are generally tend to be heard in big cathedral spaces, and, you know, St Paul's Cathedral is a kind of ultimate example of that, where, mm-hmm. you know, you lift your hands off the keys and the chord carries on for another 10 seconds. So the Festival Hall organ, I mean, the acoustic in that hall is famously dry, and the hall was refurbished in the early 2000s and, in fact, is much more generous, certainly to the tenor and the bass registers of music making. But there's a real kind of clinical detail that you can get from listening to music. That's one of the things I love about the organ in there. I mean, it makes up for the lack of kind of thrilling acoustic with this idea of detail and the detail that you can get both in terms of the pitches of the notes you're playing, but also the rhythms. So if you're playing Messiaen's music, for instance, on the Festival Hall organ, you hear detail that you really don't hear in the great big acoustic spaces of a great cathedral. Of course, it's give and take. I mean, you lose a certain amount of ambience when you're in that very clinical environment, but it's certainly nice to have that as an option.
Yeah, and something else that you said as well was about wanting to be uplifted. In a way, when an organ's played in such a clinical setting, it really fills all of that space. It doesn't expand beyond the walls. It's you're living in it. Your whole body is filled with the vibrations, and that's in itself uplifting.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, at the Festival Hall, you're right next to the organ. You know you could almost reach out and touch the pedal pipes, high pitched pedal pipes that are right above your head. So you get an incredibly thrilling ride at that place in the hall. And I always wish that it would be possible to have the audience right up there hearing the concert from the organ bench. It's a really thrilling, thrilling experience.
Yeah, a lot more intimate experience. Now, looking at your repertoire, by golly, I mean, it's diverse, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned your Bach, but you're all over the place in the best way possible. So you're stretching Bach, Golden Age, you're looking at contemporary works as well. I mean, how do you approach that challenge of bridging very different times in space and also very different musical epochs in your performances? How do you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard question to answer. I mean, I don't ever think of myself as a specialist, but I should also say that there are certain parts of the repertoire that I feel less conversant with. I mean, I don't tend to play early French music from the 17th and 18th centuries, which is a very sort of specialised organ part of the repertoire. But yeah, I mean, the new music I performed sort of most often now over the last kind of decade, really, I mean, that's been a result of a real sense of exploration. And the great thing about commissioning music and having composers write for you is that, you know, you have the authority, you're given the authority to bring music into the world, and of course there will be subsequent interpretations of that, but to be able to kind of draw a line in the sand and sort of say this is how I think this should go is an incredible privilege as well, especially if I'm performing with another ensemble or a group of instruments, like a big concerto performance. But yeah, my approach is always to try to get to the heart of the music as closely as possible, just in exactly the same way that you would do with Bach or Sveinlink or early music, like I'm playing in March in the 2 p.m. concert, to try to get to that level of knowledge and sort of conversancy with the repertoire that's new and that doesn't have any recordings to reference or kind of any tradition. So yeah, it's challenging, and to feel like I'd never quite have enough time to get to the bottom of a piece, or rather, you know, it's always nice to come back to performances, and however far you get for the premiere, there's always so much further to go. So yeah, it's challenging, but it's great fun as well.
I think that's part of that living experience. You know, you're always going to be continually learning and developing as an individual performer anyway. It's worthwhile really busting the myth on organ music not just being for the past.
That's a comment which is often made about organ music, and my sort of sense is that knowing all of the early music in the way that I do, I always have the sense that the organ somehow has been a tremendous inspiration as an instrument for whoever's writing it. So such a strange instrument as well. And it's really, despite the technological sort of advances that I was talking about in the 19th century before, really the organ has kind of remained unchanged as an instrument since the 15th and 16th centuries. The way that we control them is sort of advanced, and you know, the festival hall organ, for instance, it has electric action. But if you have a mechanical action instrument, you know, the organs haven't really changed that much in a way that the piano has changed. You know, that the keyboard family has advanced and the violin family has changed. So I think that music has always seemed new. But I mean, just going back to your specific point, I've always loved working with composers, and composers have always been incredibly taken by the organ and the possibilities that it presents. And they've always been completely sort of bowled over by what it can do. So working with living and breathing human beings to bring new art into the world has really influenced my appreciation of music from different times and different centuries. So there's a kind of freshness that you get to an approach to playing Bach, for instance. So I always try to make my Bach playing sound like the music was just written yesterday. It's hard to do that with his most famous works. But yeah, it's working in contemporary music has helped my repertoire playing beyond all measure, really, I think.
I think working with composers is so important, especially when writing for a particular instrument, being also a trombone player. Sometimes I really want to get the throat of some composer and go, what were you doing? You know, did you actually know whether this was even possible? Or
I mean, occasionally if I come across new music that I haven't had a hand in the compositional process, I look at the score and I'll think, okay, I know what the composer's after here, but the way that they've gone about notating or actually choosing the notes is just not ideal. And I think there's lots that composers can learn from performers, and vice versa, of course. But yes, yeah, I agree.
So if we're continuing our conversation about the future, really,
with organ music, then.
And I think maybe Tristan Perich's Infinity Gradient, that is described as an exploration of the pipe organ's relationship to synthesis in music. However, it's an innovative approach. How do you see this influencing, I'll say, the future of organ music, wherever that's going to go, but also how does that fit in with the broader music landscape and how diverse that is now?
I'm never as aware of the kind of long-term effects of these new pieces as perhaps other people looking at them from the outside are. I mean, a lot of what's been said about the work that I do has been to kind of diversify and to bring the organ to a wider audience. I mean, that's obviously a great thing, and I'm not saying that I'm not doing that, but I've really always been interested in the work and sort of creating a repertoire that kind of is conversant with my own musical tastes. And that comes from a kind of sense of, I'm not dissatisfaction with the organ repertoire. I've always enjoyed working with composers, as we were just talking about. But I think that in terms of the future of organ music, I mean, the legacy of great pieces of music speaks for itself. And if this body of work helps to shift the trajectory of the composition for the instrument, then that's great. I think that, I mean, just going back to what I was saying about composers always being really interested in the organ, I tend to work with composers from American backgrounds, or I mean, American composers, or composers that write in a kind of American music style. I've always been very taken with music by Philip Glass and Steve Reich, and have been working with sort of generation below, you know, my generation composers. There are two things to say, really. I mean, firstly, there's the organ music being influenced by their kind of musical ecosystem, and their ecosystem being influenced by the organ itself. And I like to think that there's something there for both sides. And a lot of new music and synthesized music, you know, electronic music, is written for instruments that have their models in pipe organ systems. So the synthesizer, the original kind of synthesizer, takes its kind of, you know, its genesis comes from a kind of pipe organ model. So that's been really fascinating. And Tristan Perich, who has written this piece Infinity Gradient, is very much from an electronic music background, but he himself is an organist and knows the pipe organ instinctively well as well. So there's a nice dialogue there with that project.
If we're thinking about the wider world, because you've clocked up your air miles, you've gone across the UK, Europe, and of course America, and you're expanding this ever-expanding breadth of organ repertoire, it's growing now. How do you see your role in evolving the public perception of the organ? Because it's a little bit different, whereas you can't take the organ around with you.
That's what makes the organ so special. I mean, you're going into a space and, you know, having said what we said about the, you know, the rather clinical acoustic of the festival hall, but you know, there, even there, you know, the sense is that the whole hall is part of the instrument. I mean, Gillian Weir talked about this, a wonderful organist. I remember her talking about this on the South Bank show with Melvin Bragg in the early 2000s. And I heard her say this when I was sort of 17 or 18, it really kind of made a huge impression on me, where she said that, you know, the instrument is the room, or the room is the instrument. So, and she was at Saint-Sulpice playing some Messiaen in a great big huge church in Paris, and she let her hands, you know, release from the keys, and, you know, the sound goes on for 7 or 8 seconds. And there is that sense of bringing an audience into a very specific space, and the instrument is custom made for that space as well, which is unlike any other instrument in the kind of classical music field. And concert halls tend to be, you place an orchestra in that hall, and of course concert halls often have their own acoustic, you know, senses of identity. I mean, the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam, you know, is thought of as being one of the very greatest and has an identity of itself. But yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky in that I've been able to perform a lot of this music to great crowds and audiences who are inquisitive and interested and open to these new works. I guess it becomes a responsibility for the legacy of the instrument that I feel quite strongly. And at the end of the day, the only thing that you can do is play music that merits being listened to. There's a lot of music which is worth listening to. So yes, absolutely.
Now, I've got a question for, I suppose, the youngsters. So what advice would you give to young musicians, as you and I have both been, looking to explore the organ and also its potential in contemporary music? What advice would you give them?
I think it's so important to try to find your own musical community. And, you know, the world is, you know, social media has changed the world out of all existence. And the world now is smaller than it ever was. I mean, people are connected in ways in which they just never were. Certainly weren't when I was a teenager. I just encourage everyone to harness that and to use that to their advantage. And try to find musical kindred spirits. And I mean, this is a hugely complex thing to talk about, especially in our own political climate here, where we're under such incredibly depressing set of artistic constraints, and with funding, and, you know, it's really, really difficult. And, you know, the provision of music in schools is really shockingly low. So it is a really tough, it's a tough thing to try to find your own community when you don't have, there's not even provision in schools. But if you are someone that is interested in contemporary music and interested in carving out a career for yourself in music, I would try to find composers. I mean, composers always need performers to play their music. I mean, Nico Muhly speaks very eloquently about this. You know, find your own musical community and write for your friends. You know, write music and put on your own concerts, and, you know, create opportunities for the work as much as possible. I know that's a tough thing to do because everything costs money, but it's remarkable what a kind of sense of shared ownership of music can give you, and a kind of sense of identity in the world. And it is possible to create some really beautiful things. And also the way that streaming works now, I mean, you can put out into the world anything that you want musically. I guess what I'm trying to say is try to make your own party and live in your own musical ecosystem as much as possible.
Wise words. Now, I've got a question for you. Have you played Henry at London Bridge Station?
I actually haven't. So I was going to try and go with my very wonderful friend Claire Singer, who is organist and music director at the Union Chapel, who's been there to the London Bridge organ, but I haven't yet. It was behind, we tried to go, but it was behind closed doors, and the barriers were up, so we couldn't get to it, which was sad. But yes, I would love to at one point.
Excellent. It's always nice hearing a little bit of pipe organ as I'm walking through London Bridge.
Yeah, exactly. It's so weird, isn't it? Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about your upcoming performance.
I've got two concerts at the Festival Hall on the same day, which is a slightly mad thing to do, but I always like a challenge. So I'm playing at 2 p.m. on the 23rd of March. This is a weekend of celebrations around the Royal Festival Hall organ's 70th birthday. And there are family orientated events in the foyer and some demonstrations of organs, etc., etc. And then I'm playing at 2 o'clock. I'm playing a wonderful selection of early music. I mean, it looks quite esoteric on paper, but I can assure everyone this is going to be a great, very kind of easy listening experience with some wonderful, very approachable music, even though the list of composers might seem a little bit daunting. Again, I'm kind of doing a bit of a deep dive into repertoire that would have been absolutely kind of current in the 17th and 18th centuries, and then culminating in some music by Bach at the end of the concert. And then at 8 o'clock, I've got the UK premiere of Tristan Perich's Infinity Gradient, which is a wonderful hour-long tour de force by Tristan for organ and 100 speakers. And yeah, it's a wonderful experience to listen to that music in the seats of the Festival Hall. It's going to be amazing.
For those musically minded amongst you, you might enjoy some other episodes that we have, including episode 89 about Thomas Arne in Covent Garden, episode 57 about the Gerald Coke Handel Collection, and episode 29 about Fitzrovia harp makers. And if you want to know a little bit more about the South Bank Centre and the Festival of Britain, then listen to episode 54.
Thank you very much, James. Lovely.
Thank you very much, indeed.
Thanks for joining me. Until next time.